And good morning, everyone,
or good afternoon,
or good evening, or whatever, anywhere on this planet. It's amazing. This digital technology, you know, you really don't know now who's listening. Anybody, anywhere, anytime can listen, and they can listen asynchronously. They can become a member of Club 19.5 and listen to shows. I just had an email from someone who said that she's gone back and she's listening to a show that we did many, 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 many months ago with Don Ecker, where Gene Roddenberry and the things that he knew that he didn't tell us, except through Star Trek, have come to light. Anyway, a couple things this morning before I get to our guest, and this program is kind of an experiment. This is going to be intriguing. Before we start, however, if you go to othersideofmidnight.com and go to the upper right-hand side, click on Radio with Pictures. Our first item under Radio with Pictures tonight is the link, number one link, which is the link to the 30th anniversary of the Challenger disaster is today, actually this afternoon. And I know because I watched it in California and was horrified along with millions and millions of other people. It was unbelievable. It set back and moved the entire space program in directions that even now we don't really understand their full import, their full meaning. It set back, I think, certain plans, certain developments, and it was so tragic. It did not have to happen. It shouldn't have happened. And it's one of the things I'm going to get into with my guest this morning, because when we talk about some of the discussions and realities we're going to talk about, when you put that against the human beings who are risking their very lives to try to open a frontier with very primitive technology, who really are heroes, because at any moment something can go horribly wrong, it raises interesting moral dilemmas. So we're going to get into some of that. The second item that I want to talk about, which is on othersideofmidnight.com, Radio with Pictures, is, again, this story from Dr. Bradley Schaefer, who's at the Louisiana State University, I believe, who is a old-fashioned astronomer. Among other things, he actually knows how to record and document magnitudes of stars off old photographic plates. Anyway, he went to Harvard as part of a study that he has now published on the Los Alamos server, and that's what is linked at the top of the page on Radio Pictures tonight, is the actual paper. What he has discovered is that this bizarre star, this Kepler mystery star, located roughly 1,400 light years, kind of out ahead of us as we orbit around the galaxy, it's a little ways out there, 1,400 light years. It's a bright star. It's a massive star. It's a bit massive and brighter than the sun. It's called an F3 star. In every other way, it is totally, 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 totally normal, meaning it has no spectral abnormalities. It has no what's called infrared excess, which means when you look at it with Spitzer or other infrared telescopes, if there was a cloud of circumstellar dust from lots and lots of comets orbiting the star, you would see it, because what the dust does is it absorbs the starlight, the sunlight, like the dust in this solar system, and then it downshifts it in frequency. The dust heats up, and it radiates what's called a Planck black body spectrum, which for a star that bright and that massive and that distant from where the dust would hang out should give a really nice infrared signature, whomping in brilliant as day. And nothing is seen like this on the infrared telescopes. So what Schaefer has now found is, in addition to Kepler finding these bizarre day-long blips, these eclipses that dim the light from KIC 8462852, which is its catalog number in the Kepler catalog, by about 20% every time this happens. And it doesn't happen regularly, so it's not something that's planetary. What Bradley found is that this, by the same magnitude, the same percentage of starlight, over the last 100 years, the last century, which is an eye blink in cosmic time. It's nothing. A century? My God, you know, we were not even flying, barely flying a century ago. Anyway, what Bradley has discovered is that this star has dimmed over the last 100 years by 20%. I'm wondering if that's really 19.5, but anyway, 20%. So what could possibly be dimming this star that it would not be intrinsic to the star? You know, energy inside, shock waves, huge star spots, something that's intrinsic. No, this seems to be something like something or someone is building something around this star. And that something is directed at Earth, because this is the only star in the galaxy, let alone all the other galaxies where we can see stars with the state-of-the-art telescopic technology we have today. It's the only star that we know that behaves like this. The only one out of billions and billions, as Curl would reportedly say. So why is this star different? Well, here's something else that's kind of weird. In Bradley's paper, which is connected again to that second link tonight on Other Side of Midnight, Radio with Pictures, you can actually find what the rate of fading has been and the total fading from the time that Harvard started taking these pictures 100 years ago to the time when Bradley did his survey. And the rate of fading in the last time period spanned by that sample is 0.95 magnitudes, 0.195, plus or minus. I mean, there's always an error bar. So that almost makes me think that whoever's building the something around KIC 8462852 and the incredible 19.5 signature of that building project over the last 100 years, and the fact now that the eclipses are on the same order of 19.5, 20% dippings for a day, 24 hours, it's almost saying to me that maybe there is somebody home over there, and this is a project somehow directed at Earth, and that, of course, would indicate that there is somebody out there to do these things, and that brings us to tonight's guest. My guest tonight is Judy Carroll, who has been what's called an experiencer of ET contact since her birth in 1952. She's a 19.5 gal. She's a Tai Chi instructor and a Reiki teacher with many years of encounters with off-planet visitors known as Greys or Zetas that reportedly have given her deep insights into the field of ET human contact. Now, Judy's only 30 years of age. That's Earth years. She has had a fully conscious daytime encounter in which she recognized the visitors as family. And then in 1995, during a profound encounter at a sacred site in England, the ETs asked her to start writing books about contact from an extraterrestrial perspective. So without further ado, good morning, Judy Carroll. Welcome to the Other Side of Midnight.
Hi, how are you doing over there?
We're doing fine. Sound like you have a little one there.
Oh, it's next door. It should shut up in a minute, I hope.
Okay.
It's a good guard dog.
Well, one of the things that people who listen to the show regularly know is that we don't normally deal in UFO or ET topics because, frankly, since the intelligence agencies got involved, which was decades and decades and decades ago, it is my belief, scientific belief, that they have so poisoned the well, it's almost impossible now to discern signals from noises, real stuff from fake stuff, real claims from fake claims, unless you put people through, you know, practically the equivalent of waterboarding, and no one, of course, is going to do that. So I have turned my attention, and I turned it quite a while ago, to something that does stand still, which is extraterrestrial archaeology. We have now found on NASA and other data sets a stunning panoply of archaeology from Mercury all the way out to Pluto. There's ancient stuff all over the solar system, which makes me think that we're a late, 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 late blooming culture in this system that had all kinds of interesting purposes, 99.9999% of which have been lost, and the other 1/1000th of 1% is basically coming down to us as legends and myths. So it's very hard to even know who we are, let alone who they are. So why don't we start at the beginning of your story, and why don't you tell us the earliest moment you remember being in contact with someone who was not from here?
Okay. Well, it's a fairly long story because I'm in my 60s now, so it's been going on for quite a long time. I, as you say, was born in 1952 in Australia, in Queensland, Australia. And I was born into a family of mixed heritage of Creole, South American, Spanish, English and Romani Gypsy heritage. And I believe that this blend of cultures was chosen on purpose to assist in the assimilation of this off-planet contact that I've had for so many years.
Right.
Because as many people are now coming to understand, tribal people are generally more open to and less fearful of the concept of otherworldly contact. My great-grandmother was actually a dancer in the Spanish Gypsy tradition, but she was also a talented psychic medium. And I followed the path of dancing, not mediumship, but dancing, from the age of 15. Now, I found Earth-Human childhood rather confusing because I'd actually made a pre-birth choice to close off part of my off-planet consciousness. But I came to realize many, many years later, during a very conscious daytime encounter, that my root soul, like my soul origin, is actually grey, Zeta Grey.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me a long time to accept this because, I mean, it's very hard to have physical proof, but I have been given proof in a number of times I've got up and spoken since I've had my books published. I've done quite a number of public talks.
So hang on, Judy, let me stop you there. So you're saying that at some point in this revelatory process that we're going to get into, you came to the realization that your consciousness, your soul, your ka, whatever you want to call it, the thing that persists after the body dies, that you have been more than a human being on planet Earth in previous incarnations.
Yes, yes. In fact, I, going by what I can feel and understand and remember, I haven't actually had many incarnations on planet Earth. I can't really relate to very many countries or lives down here, but I do have a very clear memory of a past life as a Zeta Grey. This, as I say, this realization was given to me in a full conscious contact experience back in 1983. Up until then, I'd actually had a lot of fear. As a child, I was terrified. I was obviously getting contact from childhood because you asked for the very first
memory.
Yeah,
I'd like to know the first experience and memory.
I'll cover that before I forget it. I've just so much to talk about in life, if you forget something. My very first contact was a memory of being taken up our street, which was a dead-end street, a cul-de-sac, by a tall, thin female being.
This was where you lived in England?
No, Australia.
What part of Australia?
Yes, Queensland.
Queensland.
I was born in Queensland, southeast Queensland. And I would have been about 3 years old at the time, and I have a very clear memory, still a clear memory of this being taken up our street. This tall woman held my hand, as you would with a little child,
mm-hmm.
and she took me to what my child's consciousness perceived as a railway station, and we boarded a train.
Hmm.
Now, I found this very exciting and enjoyable, and the next day I woke with a full memory of it, and I asked my real-life grandmother, who was living with us at the time, would you please take me back on the train? I want to go back on the train again. I enjoyed it. It was fun. And, of course, she had no idea what I was talking about, and it was put down as a dream.
Now, wait. You say the woman showed up and appeared as your grandmother?
Well, not so much that she appeared as my grandmother. It was more a sense I got a grandmotherly feeling with her.
Oh, so she was a stranger, but she was a friendly stranger.
Yeah, look, it's really hard to put into words. It was a grandmother feeling, but I knew it. At the time I thought it was my own grandmother, but when I asked her, she said, no, you were just dreaming.
Okay.
But I got a sense of a grandmother. What I mean by sense, it was a warm, cozy, comfortable, protected, lovely feeling. And she was taking me somewhere where I was looking forward to going. It was like a grandmother taking a child out on a daily treat.
Okay.
So anyway, for many years after that, I had trouble getting my head around, as I matured, I had trouble getting my head around this because you've taken us up to the top of our street. And as I got older and started to get around on my own, I knew that there was no railway station at the top of our street, and yet I could remember so clearly being taken there. And it really didn't become conscious with me what had actually happened until many years later, and I started getting conscious contact with the ETs, that I came to understand. I was told that this was shown to me as a screen image back then to help to allay the fear, because I was very scared as a child. I had all the typical fears that a lot of children are getting these days who are having contact, particularly with the greys.
Now, wait. Are you saying you were a fearful child who was having these contacts, or that these contacts were making you fearful, therefore they gave you this screen memory, this synthetic being, to allay your fears that are somehow part of the experience?
Yes, it was subconscious contact. I wasn't conscious at that point, but I should say superconscious. It was deeply buried in my conscious mind, but it was the contact experiences that was making me scared. Because I wouldn't go to sleep on my own until I was about 11 years old. I mean, I'm really embarrassed to talk about that, but now I'm hearing about more and more it's happening to. I always had a fear that someone was going to come into the house and take me away. I had a fear of eyes because, of course, the greys have the very distinctive big eyes that a lot of people are scared of. I was terrified of dolls. I didn't like dolls, which is quite unusual for a female child. I didn't like puppets, which are all fairly usual things that we hear about these days with children who are having contact or who have contact, particularly with the greys.
So the just the contact, even though they treated you very well and benignly, the very contact experience itself, until they altered your memory of it, was not pleasant.
Yes, this is correct. I eventually came to understand that I allowed this to happen because now as a grey, I'm working as a grey up on the ship. I have memories of this, and I'm dealing with people, human beings from down here who are in fear. And I made a pre-birth choice to allow myself to experience this fear so that I would be able to empathize with people and understand where they're coming from. Because now that I have conscious contact, my fear has completely dissipated. But having been there, done that as a child, I understand, I sympathize with people. And so when I approach people now as a grey, I try to communicate with them and tell them, look, it's okay, I'm not going to hurt you.
Do you remember from that first experience why this grandmother figure came and took you to a railway station and then you went somewhere? What happened when you went somewhere? What kind of experiences do you remember from going somewhere?
Well, at that point, I had no conscious recall at all. My memory stopped, or my conscious awareness stopped, when I stepped onto the train.
Ah, interesting.
And I realise now that a block was put on me. I probably put it on myself because I wasn't ready at that stage for what was going on.
And have you gone back and looked now?
Oh, my goodness, yes. Okay. I mean, I work up there all the time. So, yeah, no problem at all.
So what was it you were screening out? Let's try to keep some continuity, because this is a huge field. We only have 2 hours, so we're not going to cover even a fraction. But I want listeners to get a feel for how you yourself doubted this, and then you came to the realization, and how you came to the realization that, yeah, this is kind of going on.
Yeah, well... For a child, fear like that is very difficult to have to deal with. I mean, even like, say for example, I had a memory of who I was and what I was doing, but at the same time, the human body has a physiological reaction when something like that happens that's way out of our third dimensional understanding, particularly for a child. Now, I was aware that there was something going on that was beyond this third dimensional understanding. I was aware of that, but that was as far as my consciousness went then. I couldn't actually remember what was going on, but I knew something was going on. And I was torn between two things, because one part of me was drawn to it, but the other side, the purely Earth-human side, was scared of trying to face up to something that was so different and unworldly.
And did they try to help you integrate these realities? I mean, what did they start saying to you that you, ultimately, obviously, you must trust these people? Why did they start this contact to overcome the fear?
Well, it happened over a number of years. It took a while. They didn't rush me into it.
It took a number of years.
Oh, many, many years. Probably up until my teens, I had this fear. In my teens, I do remember having an episode of paralysis when I woke up in the middle of the night and couldn't move. Many, many people who have contact experiences have experienced this. And what it is it's the vibrational frequency of your body is changing to a higher octave. And often the ETs are helping you out of the body so that they can communicate more easily with you. But again, in many, many instances, people come back and they're aware of it at the time, but when they come back, they lose all conscious memory of it.
Right. So when did this contact with these beings turn into something that you actually learned something from?
Yes, right. I was very aware of them helping me through my childhood and teenage years. I didn't know who it was. I knew that I had this teacher, and I knew that he wasn't Earth human. He was a being from elsewhere. I was consciously aware of that, and I was quite aware of often asking him for help when I was young, you know, trying to get work and things like that. But full awakening actually came at age 30 in 1983, when I had a very, very profound daytime encounter. What happened, we were living on acreage at the time, and my husband's family were over visiting, and they were all out in the garden working. It was after lunch, a nice bright sunny afternoon, and I suddenly started feeling like I was coming down with the flu. And I excused myself and went up to a bedroom at the back of the house where I could be quiet, shut the door, lay down on the bed, just expected to sort of close my eyes and rest for a while. And the next thing that happened was a paralysis came over me. I couldn't move my body, and a loud roaring buzzing sound in my head. And, of course, I started getting scared. I tried to call out, but, of course, no sound came out of my mouth and no one was there anyway. They were all out down the back paddock or something.
So you thought there was something medically going wrong with you?
Well, medically, yeah, because I had felt sort of flu-y. But when all this paralysis and buzzing sound started, I started getting a headache. I really did not know what was going on. I had no idea what was going on. I'd had the paralysis before and it scared me. I didn't know what it was. Okay, so the next minute or next moment, I suddenly became aware of three of the greys standing beside the bed on my left-hand side, and they were so physically present they were blocking out light that was coming in a window. And when I saw them, I recognized one of them. And I knew that he was this teacher that I had contact with sort of more in my superconscious, not on a conscious level, but I recognized. When I say I recognize, it's hard to put into physical terms. It's not that you see them and you think, oh, yes, I know your face. Oh, yes, I know you by your hair or whatever. It's a deeper recognition. People who had contact are... would know what I'm talking about. It's like a soul-to-soul connection.
Would you say it's like a resonance, a kind of a knowing?
A resonance, yes, absolutely, absolutely.
Okay.
When you connect with a close person like that who's close to you but from another dimension, it's almost like you get, well, not almost, it is like you get a real sense of oneness, and it's like... you know them and they know you right down to the depths of your very being, and there's this total feeling of unconditional love that if you try and talk about, the tears come into your eyes. It really is beyond what I can put into terms, like in Earth human terms. Anyway, I felt this with this being, and I suddenly recognized the other, and the other people, the other greys present, and it was like, all of a sudden, I thought, oh, my God, you're family. I know who you are. You're my family. And it was quite an emotional moment for me. And it was quite funny because they then started...
No, wait. Had you been fearful up to that point?
The fear started to dissipate in my teens. from about age 15 through to when I had this experience at age 30, the fear was a lot easier. I still knew there was something going on, but I wasn't as scared as when I was a child. It was like, okay, I know there's something going on, but it's okay, they're not hurting me, no problem, I'll just accept it. But I had no idea what it was on a physical level.
So with this experience, you weren't fearful, you just were watching what was going on within you, and you realized, wait a minute, I know these guys somehow.
Yes, that's exactly what it was. It was absolute, such a sudden realization. It was really quite amazing and very emotional, recognizing them like that.
Well, it puts everything in a totally different light.
It does. It was an absolute eureka moment in my life. That contact experience turned my whole life around. It was quite amazing.
So what happened?
Okay, I was aware that they were speaking to me. We were having a conversation on a telepathic level, and I was given instructions that there were certain things that I had to learn. They told me that it's time for you to get on with your mission.
Oh.
And they told you you've been hiding.
They were calling you out of retirement.
Or calling me out of retirement, calling me back off my holidays. Because we were living on an acreage property and breeding Labradors and just, you know, your normal sort of had
our horses.
Your
normal earthy terrestrial living, and then suddenly your celestial friends drop in and say, don't get too comfy.
Exactly, and I was told, you've got to stop hiding yourself away. Now it's time for you to get back to work.
And they basically said it just like that. It's time to go to work.
Time to get back to work. And they said, you have to undergo certain studies to enable you to be able to carry out this work, because the work that we want you to do, we want you to become a teacher of energy modalities. I was advised to take up meditation, because up until then I'd actually been a professional dancer. As I say, I followed in the footsteps of my great-grandmother, who was a flamenco dancer. So I'd been a professional dancer up until that point. So I hadn't really been into meditation or anything like that. Mm. I was very, very physically oriented.
God, no wonder they showed up and said, it's time to stop the party and get back to work.
Exactly. And they realized this, and so therefore they advised me to get into meditation through Tai Chi, which I had hardly even heard of back then. I didn't even really know what this Tai Chi thing was.
Hold it there. My guest this morning is Judy Carroll, who is you listed euphemistically as an experiencer. I think that's kind of like weasel wording. She hangs out with aliens or ETs or and I love this expression, family. Because frankly, as you know on this program, I've been discussing the family out there for a very long period of time. And the family comes in various shapes and sizes, and its significators are deeper than what we look like. Anyway, you're on the other side of midnight. We're going to get back to this fascinating story with Judy in a moment. My name is Richard C. Hoagland, and yes, we shall return. We are back this morning with my guest, Judy Carroll. Judy, you got to get really close to that mic. I don't know whether your headset's cut out, but there's a little bit of an echo that we can fix if you get a little closer to the mic.
Closer, is that better?
That's a little better, yes.
Yeah.
So these guys show up and they say, okay, time enough, sister. You've been larking around too long. Time to get back to work. And they gave you a kind of a reading list.
They sure did, a study schedule that I was to carry out. As I said before, they advised me to take up Tai Chi, which I later found out is known as moving meditation. And I had no idea at the time, but this was an absolute ideal bridge for a physically oriented person like myself to be able to get into normal meditation, which is just sitting still. The Tai Chi really eased me into that. And also they told me that I should be learning some sort of natural healing modality as well. Mm. And, of course, to take up meditation, because they told me that they wanted me to be able to pass on these teachings or modalities, I should say, to people down here to help Earth's humans know how to work with energy, because, of course, these are all energy modalities. Tai Chi, natural healing and all is working with energy. And I was to learn them so that I would be able to pass them on to others. Now, I must admit, at the time, I felt really daunted by this because I had no idea of anything like this at all. I don't know what it was like in the States back then, but in Australia in 1983, these things were just not heard of. ET contact wasn't heard of. We didn't have Roswell or anything like that. I'd never heard of extraterrestrial contact,
well,
now consciously.
We had X-Files. In fact, we have X-Files again. And one of your countrymen, Dean Haglund, is going to be on the show talking about X-Files. He's already been on the show. But, you know, media-wise, culturally, Australia is a little bit back of where we are. So back in the 80s...
Oh, extremely back.
I'm sure I was being very diplomatic. I mean, one of the charms of Australia is you can actually see snapshots of what we used to be, what we used to be like,
yes.
which is
yes.
very nice.
Yes.
So anyway, yeah, in the 80s, we were dealing with this big time here, but in Australia, the idea of alien abduction was probably less credible than the Prime Minister, you know, taking all his clothes off in whatever is your Canberra Times Square.
That's absolutely right. It just was not heard of. I had never come up against that mindset at all. I'd never, as a child, I mean, it just wasn't spoken of. It was never heard of, ET contact or anything like that. It didn't come into our lives at all. So it was such a huge thing for me to come up against these beings. I had to admit, the very first time I saw them, I recognise them as family, but even back then on a conscious level, the term ET hadn't hit me. I knew they weren't Earth human, but I didn't quite know what they were.
So appearing first time when you were three, and then appearing semi-regularly when you were, you know, go through your teen years, and then there's this hiatus, and then they come back. All that early time was to prepare you and to draw the fear down to where they could actually talk to you as an adult about this is your mission. You were selected to do something. Did they tell you why you?
Because I'm linked to them. I mean, I am a Grey. So
so it is about family.
It's about family. And it's not just me. There are quite a number of us down here now. I mean, thousands. And also, it's not that we're selected. We actually volunteer for this mission.
Okay, now that's the part that there can people have some problems with. How do you know?
Because I can remember volunteering, and I've also been told. But yes, I can remember doing it.
So you were regressed, or you just remembered suddenly one day, like this epiphany, that this is family, you suddenly realized, wait a minute, it is family.
Yeah. Over the years, as I got to know them better, and I started getting conscious recall of actually being up there as a Grey, because when I first met them, that wasn't a conscious thing in my mind. I must have been aware of it on a deeper level, but certainly not consciously. But as time passed... And I did start to do these other modalities. Like, for example, we were living out in Acreage, and they told me that I had to move back to town. We had no intention of doing this, but over the next 3 years, circumstances changed, mm-hmm. which got us back to town, which then enabled me to start accessing things. Now, over those...
Wait. When you say accessing, you don't mean physically, like going to a library. You mean...
Going to a meditation group.
So involving yourself with other people, which is kind of hard when you're in the middle of nowhere, out in the middle of the outback of Australia.
Exactly. As soon as we got back to the city, strange coincidences started happening, and things just fell into place to enable all this to happen. For example...
Do you think that this was just synchronistic, or they, whoever they are, arranged it?
Oh, I could feel them arranging it, for sure. The way it happened was just quite incredible. I can go into details over it if you like, because it is quite a story.
Oh, yeah, by all means. That's why you're here. I mean, having a mission from upstairs in the current condition of this planet is something we should probe, we should explore.
Exactly. Yes, well, within a week of moving back to the city, I was walking in the local shopping centre and saw a poster up in a shop window advertising Tai Chi classes that were starting in about a week's time.
And this was one of the classes they said you should take.
This was one of the classes they told me to take. Now, I had never seen Tai Chi classes advertised anywhere, and yet immediately I got back into town, I was faced with this. So I started up the classes. About a year after that, we were living next door to a rental property, and the people who were renting this property moved out, and some new people came in. And this new family, the woman happened to have, they'd just come up from Tasmania down south, and this woman happened to have been sitting in a meditation group for 10 years, and her teacher who ran the group had just happened to move to Queensland as well and was living around the corner from us. And she was about to start up a closed meditation circle. Now, I had never meditated, and yet they invited me to join a closed circle, which was very, very unusual. I don't know if you know much about spiritualism, but normally in the spiritualist church, you go into what's called an open circle to learn how to do it. Right. And then when you're used to meditating, you're invited to join a closed circle. Now, this friend, this lady who moved next door was a spiritualist, and her friend was a spiritualist minister. And they invited me, who'd never done meditation, they invited me out of the blue to come and join a closed circle that they were starting.
Hmm. So now, basically, by having friends in high places, pardon the pun, who are pulling strings, you're on a fast track because you've got a mission and there's not a lot of time and you've got to get with the program. So what?
Exactly. Okay. And
now, are you aware, as these things are falling into your lap, are you saying, like, oh, give me a break. You guys are really kind of being overtly obvious about this.
I must admit I had a few laughs about it.
Yeah.
And what people don't know is the Greys have got a tremendous sense of humour. They've got a terrific sense of humour. So there would have been a few chuckles going on up there as well. And, we've got an hour, no backing down. So anyway, I joined this closed meditation circle, and I was in it for 8 years. Now, while I was in it, I was exposed to spiritualist healing, which is an energy healing technique. And then from there, I went on to learn Reiki because, again, by sheer coincidence, I was teaching Tai Chi by then. I studied Tai Chi for several years and went on to teach it.
Just for people who may not be familiar, describe Tai Chi and Reiki, because I know one is a massage technique and the other is a martial arts discipline.
Yeah, Tai Chi is the very, very original martial arts. All the other martial arts, Kung Fu and all the other ones, grew out of Tai Chi. But Tai Chi isn't, it's not an attack-type martial art. It's a solo practice, and it's a series of forms, what are referred to as forms or moves, done at a very, very slow pace, and the breathing is timed in with it, and the whole idea is to rebalance the energy system, because of course all Eastern medical philosophies are based on the idea that we have an energy system underlying our physical body.
Right.
And modalities like Tai Chi and other things like yoga, acupuncture, etc., and Reiki, of course, are all designed to rebalance the energy system, because the Eastern belief is that all illness originates or arises in the energy system, and then the very last manifestation is a physical symptom. So by doing practices like that, you keep your energy system in balance and harmony, which promotes good health, or if you have a health issue, it will help to rebalance the energy system to bring everything back in balance. And Reiki does the same thing. With Reiki, it's not actually a massage. We work more, we touch very, very lightly or just slightly above the physical body. And again, it has the same effect. It rebalances the energy body.
Okay. So you're basically working it from both ends.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
Well said. I found the two just so compatible because, I mean, they're both energy balancing modalities, and the Tai Chi and the Reiki work very well together. And now I teach Reiki, and a lot of my Tai Chi students have come to learn Reiki, and a lot of my Reiki students learn Tai Chi, and the two work very, very well together.
Well, it's interesting that your ET family shows up, and the first thing they say is, you know, you got to kind of get in sync with the energy fields you're going to be working with, i.e., we call them torsion fields over here. Uh-huh. And these modalities actually immerse you in fields, and you work with them, and you experience, and you feel them, and then you can put them to use. So they were really preparing you for what? Why are they here? Who are the Grays / Zetas? Why are they here? Are they in fact the progenitors of Homo sapiens sapiens?
They're one of the progenitors. There's a number of races. I refer to them as creator races, who work with key creator, God, source, energy, to develop life forms on many different planets. And that's exactly what they did on planet Earth. They developed mankind down here. The Greys were one of the groups that did this. Now, the Greys specifically could be described as cosmic alchemists. And the reason why we're doing all this work here is trying to awaken Earth humans to multidimensional levels of reality. Because people down here have, many, many people have no idea. Everything's third dimension. They have no idea that there are multidimensions out there. And that these multidimensional dimensions are as real, if not more real, than third dimensional reality. And part of our evolution as Earth humans is opening ourselves up to this multidimensional reality that the universe really is. Now, the Greys are here to assist with this, along with other ETs. The Palladians are here doing it. The Arcturians are here. We're all working together. It's like a real team effort.
Now, wait, let me stop you there again. Is everybody on the same team, or are there antagonists? Are there people who think we're the dumbest kids on the block and we need to be sold and manipulated into everything? Are there people who think that it's much too non-democratic, that we need to know more of our own history so that we're not being manipulated mindlessly into these endless stupid pet tricks we're doing on the planet? In other words, is it a unified political approach to saving humanity, or are there real major differences? And are there, in fact, really enemies out there who would prefer that we just kind of go away?
Okay, yes, there is two groups in opposition to each other. The negative group is based right here, working very closely with Earth humans, and they basically are Earth humans themselves because they've been resident on this planet for millennia. So there's no negative ETs coming in. The negative group, I talk about them in my new book as the controllers. And they have been around down here. They got stuck down here, and they've been here for millennia. And they basically, they are the ones who are in control, keeping people dumbed down, stopping people realizing that there's way more out there. This planet was actually hijacked many millennia ago by them, and they're still down here in control.
So it's basically that old Peanuts cartoon where he says, we've met the enemy and it's us.
Yeah, very, very.
So this is a faction of the human species. Do they have off-world help? Do they have ET allies that actually are kind of giving them little edges here and there, technology, insights, energy, you know, vibrational, whatever you want to call it?
Yes, an off-planet faction did come here. They actually came originally as part of the creator group, but they got caught up in ego, etc., and which brought their vibrational frequency down. It was a draconian group. So they got stuck here and have been reincarnating ever since as Earth humans, but they're also helping, keeping people down, not allowing people to move forward. So, yes, they are helping certain factions of government, etc.
So it's basically a huge Cold War in interstellar space.
Huge, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But the weapons include consciousness manipulation weapons.
Yes, for sure, for sure. There's a massive amount of mind control going on down here.
Have you watched CNN lately? Have you watched MSNBC? Have you watched Fox? I mean, we had a very interesting guest on last night, Cynthia Larson, and she's going to be back, you know, later, you know, in the next few weeks or so. She has introduced us to the most interesting set of data. There are people walking around, Judy, who do not remember the same stuff that other people remember.
Yeah, I can believe that.
And it's so remarkable. In fact, I didn't want to forget tonight to leave people with a major question that I want you to also think about and to answer if you want to. There's a very famous movie with Kevin Costner called Field of Dreams. And there's a signature line in that movie that basically is the reason for the whole existence of the movie. And I have found that people seem to remember that line again differently as part of a whole bunch of lines that we went through in the last week or two and then the last night again. And this line is, you know, if you build it, blank will come. And you're supposed to fill in the blank. And when I went to YouTube through a friend of mine who sent me this connection this afternoon, he said, Richard, it's worse than we thought. Look what's happened now. And the line is totally different than I remember it. Now, is that part of ET manipulation of the consciousness field so that different parts of us are getting different messages so we all come out in this super plan at some given objective?
Well, more of the mind control is actually coming from down here. And what I can see in that line is a very, very great truth that the ETs are trying to get across is that line, if you build, what it'll come. Mm-hmm. In other words, you create your own reality. Now, and this is why there's so much disinformation being put out here through the media, through movies, etc., etc., etc. It's to get people thinking in a fearful, negative, frightened, disempowered way rather than remembering that we all have God's source energy within, which helps us to get our empowerment back, which is exactly what the ETs are here now trying to do.
Well, you
There's more out there.
It's interesting to me that if so much energy is being put into creating a matrix, you know, false realities, false history, false this, false that, and this revolution we're seeing in every part of the political spectrum, the mainstream political spectrum, is people basically, even if they're not conscious of it, they're fed up with being lied to. In every dimension, they're totally, totally, totally fed up. They're willing to take a gander on things that were so outrageous even months ago because of the rate of change of wherever we're rushing to at Warp 9. So back to the manipulation.
Is it not
possible that the ET part of this equation can give us more help because we need a little help? Every time you try to, with programmed people, raise issues that are beyond their programming, they not only reject you, they reject the message, they reject everything, and they're almost impervious to change. So how do we get enlightenment? Is that why, for instance, your teachers started you with meditations? Because when you open yourself up to working with energy, enlightenments can come.
Yes, exactly, exactly. That's why there's ones down here like me introducing these things like Reiki and Tai Chi and yoga and meditation, etc., etc., etc. These are absolute requisites if humanity is going to open itself up. What people don't understand is that evolution for humans is an opening and an expansion of conscious awareness. The average Earth human can access about 10% of their conscious awareness. Now, I'm not talking about brain here. We get scientists, oh, no, we use our whole brain. Yes, mm-hmm. We do use our whole brain. I'm talking about conscious awareness. It's a different thing. This is intrinsically linked into the 10% of active DNA that the average human has access to. Now, part of the reason why people are being taken up on the ships is we are trying to repair and activate more human DNA, which in turn will enable Earth humans to access more conscious awareness. And this is where evolution is going on this planet.
Okay. So is the consciousness, in other words, this massive program, it must be a massive program involving all these entities, are they multidimensional or are they really space travelers from a galactic confederation, parts of a physical family?
There's both. All of us are multidimensional. Again, this is knowledge that's been lost down here. People don't realize we're all multidimensional beings.
Okay.
But on planet Earth, we're focused in 3D, what we perceive as reality. So we're not able to access these other higher parts of our being. But once we start opening up our consciousness and expanding our conscious awareness, that's what that's all about, is opening up to other parts, other multidimensional realities that we're part of. That's the whole key to what ET contact is about, genuine ET contact. There's a lot of fake stuff going on by the group down here, but that's what genuine ET contact is about.
When you say fake stuff, you mean like the so-called My Lab and that, yeah. Because, see, that's where the fear porn is ramped up to the overwhelming extreme. I want to come back to this idea that it took you a decade or two for them working with you to reduce that level of innate fear. Is it possible, Judy, that the fear has been programmed into us genetically so that we will not have contact with these beings and thereby never get out of our, quote, as Alex Jones says, prison planet?
Well, this is the whole key to it, is moving past the fear. At the moment, they will talk about the Armageddon and that, you know. That it's not a physical war. All these things, Armageddon, jihad, whatever you want to call it, it's not a physical war. It's a war within your own being, and it's between love and fear, you know, the God and Satan within, if you want to use Christian terms. And what we've got to try and do is overcome the fear, because the fear is of a very low vibrational frequency. We've got to try and connect with the God within. I'm speaking in Christian terms here so people can get a little bit more of a handle on it, because I know that's what the majority of people understand. So all of these spiritual practices like meditation, yoga, Tai Chi, prayer, Christian prayer is just
this is effective in this way.
All these spiritual practices all assist us to raise our vibration from fear to love. And this is why religion must be based on love. As soon as fear, judgment, bigotry, all that comes in, that is not religion of God. That's a religion made by man. God is pure love. And so if we're going to truly link with God, go back to God, we have to link into unconditional love. And unconditional love is about respect for other people's beliefs, not trying to force your beliefs onto other people, respecting all life forms, not taking life, etc.
In your interaction with the family, I really like the fact that you use that term, because that's basically what I've been saying for years, that we're dealing with the family in various iterations. Okay, have they given you any history perspectives? Have they shown you or told you or laid out for you how we got into the sorry mess we are tonight on this planet when we have such extraordinary history ourselves and such extraordinary potential? Why are we in the mess we're in?
Well, look, this is basically what my new book is all about. I go right back through the history of planet Earth and talk about how things went wrong. Just to put it in a nutshell, another friend of mine who's also grey, who has memory working up on the ships, who's written a lovely book, lady by the name of Susie Hansen. She's a New Zealand lady. And one of the greys gave her a very good analogy one night to explain what had happened with planet Earth. They said, think of the universe as being like a free-flowing river, and planet Earth has been, it's become like a stagnant pool. It's been cut off from the rest of the universe. So planet Earth and humanity isn't evolving as it should along with the rest of the universe.
And how was it cut off?
Because of this problem that happened millennia ago with this group that I speak of as the controllers, who took over. They basically hijacked the planet from the legitimate creator race who was assisting with evolution down here. They hijacked the planet and took over control of humanity and have been exploiting them ever since.
And the objective is, I mean, what do they get out of it?
Well, they're basically egomaniacs. I mean, they just want to be in control. That's their whole agenda, is to be in control, to exploit other people. Because they're stuck down here and they don't want anybody else to move on.
And when you say stuck, you mean they're spiritually or psychologically or physically?
Spiritually, they keep being reincarnated back down here because they can't move past the fear themselves. Like anyone who needs to be in control or is caught up in ego or whatever, all these things stem from fear. So this controller group are caught, they're trapped in fear, and they're trapping others down here with them and exploiting them at the same time.
So it sounds like there's not a lot of thinking going on. It's an awful lot of programming and rerunning the same old tapes.
Exactly.
So this group, now, who is this group? You say they're family. If they're family, why do they let things get into such a horrible condition?
Because of free will on planet Earth.
Yeah, but if it's not free, If you live in a manipulated reality, your will is no longer free. If everyone is controlling exactly. your sensory inputs, they're controlling, like the old Twilight, not Twilight Zone, but other the Outer Limits. We control all that you see. We control all that you hear. That's a metaphor, of course, for what we're talking about now. Under those conditions, how can free will even exist?
Well, this is the problem. People think that they have free will down here, but they don't. But they've been tricked into believing that they do. And the problem is it's now become a vicious circle, because these controllers are causing more and more fear about the real ETs who are trying to help, ones like myself. So because of this level of fear, they're driving people away and putting up a barrier between them and us. We cannot. It's really difficult. People can complain about the greys not communicating with them. I've heard this many times. Oh, I can remember going up on the ship and they wouldn't communicate with me. They wouldn't talk to me. Now, I have a very, very clear memory of walking into the clinic up on the ship, and there was an Earth human man lying on the table, and he turned around. He was half paralyzed, and he managed to turn his eyes and saw me in my gray form. Mm-hmm. And he was absolutely terrified. And I did my very best to communicate with him, because we'd had him up there before, and I was trying hard to say to him, look, it's okay, I'm not going to hurt you, don't you remember me, I'm only going to help you. I had a dual procedure on him to help him. And yet the level of fear, it was like a cocoon around his body that my telepathic thoughts couldn't get through. It was like my thoughts kept bouncing back at me.
Okay, crucial question. Was that an innate fear, or had that been programmed in even at a genetic level?
Come again? Just give me the
question.
Was
that fear innate just because his species, human, yours at that point, gray, was just so incompatible that there was an automatic, oh, it's the other, it's dangerous, it's alien, it's something I don't know? Or was this fear consciously amplified and developed by genetic engineering? So human beings in this incarnation, in this place, do not interact with the rest of the family. Don't answer now. Think about it. We're at the top of the hour. We're at 2 o'clock here in the land of enchantment here in New Mexico. My guest this morning, Judy Carroll. Judy is an experiencer. We're talking about ETs. We're talking about grays and zetas, messages, and fear. Can we overcome the fear? You're on the other side of midnight. My name is Richard C. Hoagland. We shall return. And we are back on the other side of midnight, an hour to go on this frosty morning here in the land of enchantment. It's a little warmer this morning. It's kind of like in the mid-20s. For all you people in the southern climes or on the other side of the planet where the sun is shining, yes, it's a frosty. There's a gorgeous gibbous moon out there with Jupiter just hanging off the bow. Really striking. So if you can see the moon wherever you are, go out and take a look. That's Jupiter, the largest planet of the solar system. Okay, we've got a question from Anthony. Anthony wants to know if we're multidimensional, when we die, do we transfer back to another dimension? And I'm going to add my kind of, you know, writer question, which is that where this pool of consciousness and souls comes from, to basically go and become different species? So that, you know, someone said to you at one point, hey, number 19.5, you're going to be a gray this time. You'll love it. You'll love it.
Yeah, that's it. Absolutely right. That is where we go between lives, and when the consciousness. Because remember, we're not our physical body. Our physical body is simply a vehicle for the soul and spirit. So it's like when we die, it's like a driver getting out of his car. And once we can access those higher dimensions, we become far more consciously aware of the multidimensionality. Except if we've been brainwashed by belief systems down here, then our spirit form can be limited until it starts to wake up and realize, hey, there's more going on. This is the reason why often if a person who has absolutely no religious belief at all, they're out and out atheist, and they'll have a near-death experience, and they'll come back and they'll say, oh, there's nothing out there, I was just surrounded by blackness. The question I would put to them is, well, how do you know you were surrounded by blackness? You must have some sort of consciousness to know you were surrounded by blackness. If a person has a belief that, you know, there's angels playing harps and God sitting up on a throne judging you, they will often experience that, because particularly once the consciousness is out of the body, we create our own reality. So it depends on how open we are to multidimensionality, whether we can even access it after death.
So really the war going on right now between these various polarities, the good guys, the bad guys, the manipulators, the mind, I can't use that term even on radio, on satellite, the folks that are trying to do us in are basically trying to freeze us in thought forms, in the ability to manipulate the field, because now apparently is a critical time where, however a lot of us think, we'll define the reality we're going to live in for the rest of our many, 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 many lives, right?
Yes. Yes, which is why it's so important to use your free will and your self-empowerment and not get sucked in by all these fear agendas and disempowering agendas that are being put out. Realize that you have God within, you have empowerment within, you're a loving being, you are safe, you're secure, providing you can keep that love connection going.
So it seems to me that if the human race is in such a bad condition, someone must have shown you at some point how it got here. I think I asked the variant of that question before. Have you been shown what has happened millions and millions of years ago to put us in this space tonight?
Yes. Well, as I say, it's this group that hijacked the planet, and they basically took over. They created religions and things like that. They took over the human mind. They took over controlling the way people think. So this is the reason why people have so much trouble trying to get away from this, because it has been programmed over, you know, millennia.
Okay, so you're only referring to the history of the last few millennia, but not the demonstrable history that of somebody out there, when my research says it's us, you know, it's more family, that left all kinds of stunning things all over the solar system, which is millions of years older. Your guides, your teachers, your, I don't know what to actually call them, not angels, but, you know, teachers probably is a good term. They have not shown you other than the immediate past, and they've left the millions and millions of years ago where things happened before all that, and we were confined to one planet. They've left all that alone.
Well, you've got to remember that Earth plane humanity hasn't been around for millions and millions and millions of years. I'm going back to when Earth plane humanity was first developed as a species. But at the same time, no, they haven't concentrated on that with me very much, because as Greys, we specialise in one particular field. And my field isn't going back in the past. It's helping people to understand so they can free themselves for the future.
Okay.
With spiritual teachings and energy. So that's where I specialise. I don't have a great deal of information about going right back there.
Okay, it's very interesting, Judy, because it really gives us a view of specialisation and, you know, the kind of complex society where people can't know everything about everything. So
yeah.
You've got to kind of focus. Okay, so let's talk to you as a therapist, as someone who can reach out and help people who are listening to us tonight who are having experiences they cannot fathom. They don't understand why them. How can you reach out and help people going through what you went through with the benefits of what you now know?
Okay, the key is understanding. Now, I am helping a lot of people in this field. I get emails from all over the world and helping people out because I understand the fear factor, having been there, done that. The key is understanding. As I say, knowledge is power. Understanding is empowerment. So people must learn to think for themselves and not get sucked in by all this massive amount of fear-mongering that's going on. It's really important to understand this, that as quantum physics is proving, you create your own reality by the way you think, and these controllers, the negative ones down here, are aware of this fact. So they've been manipulating people's minds on Earth for millennia to get humanity thinking in terms of disempowerment, vulnerability, dependency, and fear. Now, I have noticed again and again people who are going through what they perceive as being victims of ET contact, they're hugely disempowered. And once I speak to them, or whoever, many therapists are working in this field, once we speak to them and say to them, look, you know, you have the power within. If something's happening you don't like, say so. Don't just allow it to happen. You've got God essence within you. You are a powerful being. Now, the problem is, it's all very well telling someone like that, but the person has to be able to link into that and fully believe it themselves. Once they can do that, their empowerment enables them to overcome whatever's happening or to see it in a different light. In many instances, it's not that it's actually something negative that's happening. It's because they don't understand what's happening and their body reacts in a physiological way of fear. Once they can be assured that, look, it's okay, there's nothing to be scared of, they will often find that the whole thing changes. I've heard this again and again.
Do you remember, well, you had the screen memory put in place when you were three, so obviously even at three, these beings realized that if they appeared in their real form, you would have this fear response, right?
Yeah.
So it's not something we learn, it's got to be something, I come back to this, it's got to be something programmed in, and like if someone wants to keep the human race separated from the rest of the universe and the rest of the family, that would be the way you would do it. You would literally use advanced genetic engineering to tinker with human beings to where if they're in the same room as species you don't want them to interact with, they can't stand it.
And for sure. And it's just part of the mindset down here to fear what's different.
Yeah, but I'm talking about something which is light years beyond that. Because, yeah, we're all, look, I love being outside at night, you know, I was outside at night on Mount Wilson once, and there was a noise, and I looked across the parking lot, and there was a brown bear. Now, I was very intelligent. I got into my car, and I left very quietly and swiftly, because me walking around with a brown bear in the woods, you know, above Los Angeles in the middle of the night was not a good idea. So certain fears are based in reason. I'm talking about the unreasoned fear of confronting a three-year-old, and you're an ethereal being, but you have to mask who you are because the innate chemistry of the being you're dealing with can't handle the truth. That's telling us, I think, again, in the context of your experience and your story tonight, I think it's telling us something profound about someone putting walls between these species, borrowing a term from a current campaign.
I totally agree with that. I totally agree. People have been brainwashed over generations to be afraid. Be afraid of anyone who looks different,
If I'm right, this is deeper than just, you know, programming, meaning it's what we talk about in the culture and all that. This is at a genetic level.
Because you get a physiological reaction in your body.
And it took them how many years to unprogram your body, whatever they were doing, whatever treatments, so you can deal with them now as people as opposed to monsters?
Monsters, yes. Well, demons or whatever. Yeah, for sure.
Well, that tells me there's a pretty powerful anti-insurgent campaign going on. And if that's true, then the human race must really be valuable and important if somebody spent so much time trying to keep us from knowing who we are and who's out there.
Well, the thing is, they want to control us. That's the bottom line.
But see, it's got to be more than just control for control's sake. It's got to be control for a reason, for a purpose, for an objective.
Oh, you're very obviously very right on that.
I'm just wondering if maybe somebody dropped some clues. If a lot of times if people talk to you about different things or come at it from a different way, you'll think about things that you didn't put together before. What's the big picture reason why we're really, really, really screwed unless we do things differently?
Well, as I say, it seems to be a vicious circle because they've disempowered humans, and then because humans are disempowered, they then can't get their power back, if you understand what I'm saying. It's sort of going around in a circle. It's like they're stuck now, and they just need to be pulled out of that. It's like someone drowning, and they need to someone to grab their hand and pull them out.
So there needs to be a game changer.
Why wouldn't
a game changer that would affect everybody on the planet would be to show them on television, you know, we have ET friends out there, they have spaceships, they have cameras, they could take stunning images and show us what's really around us, our ancient heritage, and that would blow the doors off all the cover-ups and would start a conversation as, who the hell are we really and what are we doing in this place?
But the thing is we have to be careful there, because you know what happens, this has happened again and again on planet Earth. When, like, say, for example, going back 200, 300 years ago, 1770, if I remember my history at school, when white man first came to Australia, to the shores of Australia, they imposed their civilization on the Aboriginal people and completely wrecked the Aboriginal people's spirituality, the way of life, everything. The same happened in your country when white people came. They completely wrecked the Native Americans' way of life. Now, this is the last thing that the ETs want to do.
So you're saying that the Greys slash the ETs, the Zetas, and I want to get into the lineal history of who they are and where they come from and why we call them that in a moment, but you're saying they basically have a prime directive, like Gene Roddenberry's in Star Trek, where they don't make us aware of everything we used to be because of the shattering dislocation psychologically of the human spirit if we were confronted with the truth all of a sudden. So they have to be kind of around the edges, getting individuals to reach this conclusion?
Yes, it has to be a very, very gradual thing. I mean, you don't want people to just, you know, completely lose their minds, and that could happen. Because there are many people who are in fear down here. There are also many people who aren't even the slightest bit interested. I'm becoming very aware of this because people who are into ETs and UFOs and that were all saying, oh, you know, we want disclosure. Why don't the ETs just show themselves? But what people don't understand is that we're still in a minority down here. There are heaps and heaps more people who really aren't interested. They're completely happy where they are. They don't want to change. That's
so,
the bottom line.
So if change came, why would they be affected then at all? Why wouldn't those that are at the leading edge of society and could use the technological benefits and the consciousness, you know, elevations and the different insights and the perspectives on why human beings, you know, kill each other as the other as opposed to real aliens, why wouldn't that be in alliance with the people who are just kind of too out of it to care? Wouldn't they proceed on their own track by themselves and not really interfere if they're so unchangeable?
Well, not really, because, I mean, you've got to realize that we're operating in oneness here. We think of ourselves as being individual, but in actual fact, there's a collective consciousness of humanity. So what affects one affects everybody. You can't separate yourself like that. See, this is an example of limited earth plane thinking. In multidimensional reality, we are all one. So what affects one person affects everybody, which is why the ETs have to be extremely careful down here. Why are we coming in the back door?
Well, wait. Ben, what you're saying, and it's about wording it correctly so I understand, not that the bulk of these people are indifferent. The bulk of these people, if you interfere with their reality, they will react very, very, very badly because they don't want the reality changed, and they will do everything to keep their reality unchanged, and that's, you're saying, our real problem.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. They're happy where they are.
And they will fight to the death to stay where they are. That's what you're really implying.
Exactly, exactly.
That we could have huge, massive civil wars and insurrections and, you know, biblical end times of civilizations. Wait a minute. We have all that now, and we don't have the benefits of knowing that we have an ET heritage.
Yeah, that's right.
So it seems to me like someone's calculating wrong. If they're on a timetable, Judy, if they taught you early, beginning in 52 when you were 3, and then came back to you and said, okay, it's time now to activate you, it's time to swing into full mission mode, you're going to write 2 books, actually 3 I think now.
Yeah, 3
and,
now.
and you're going to get on international platforms and tell people the reality. Do we have time to continue this slow pace when in fact the world is going to hell in a handbasket?
Well, again, time is down here. When you move away from third-dimensional reality, there is no such thing as time. Everything is in its perfect timing. Now, okay.
Yeah, but wait. If that was true, then we don't have to do a damn thing. We just wait for God to sort it all out, or Allah, or whoever. And we,
because timing does apply down here.
You can go back to dancing. I can go back to, what did I used to do before this show? Let me think. What did I do? The point is, if there's no urgency, what's the point?
Well, there is and there isn't, because it depends on whether you're speaking about earth plane time. Yes, there is an
urgency. That's where I kind of hang out these days. So I'm speaking of earth plane time, yes. All the millions of people around the world, some of whom can listen to us. I'm talking about where we live, earth right now. We're heading in the wrong direction, and the rate at which our rescuers are moving doesn't seem to be inflecting the curve very much. There needs to be some more overt, accelerated action, or that brick wall we see up ahead that we're going to hit at 3,000 miles an hour, it ain't moving.
Well, this is the difficulty that we're up against, because we can't force our presence onto people, but yes, we are up against a time frame. So this is why we're walking on a real razor's edge, and there are ones like me who are getting up more and more and talking. That's exactly what I'm doing. That's the job I'm doing. That's what I'm here for. So we are doing what we can.
Okay, so let's go to your books, because I obviously would like to sell some books for you tonight. You know, without selling books, you can't stay on the air. You can't, you know, continue your mission. So let's sell some books. What do you cover in your first book? What's the big insight from that first book, which I understand is nonfiction, as opposed to the fictional treatment in the second book? Is the third book another fictional treatment?
No, it's nonfiction.
So it's nonfiction. So you have a sandwich. You've got two nonfiction books bookending the fictional treatment, where you get into some really wild stuff because you don't think people would accept it if you sold it as reality.
Not so much that they wouldn't accept it. You have to realize the mind frame I was coming from back then. That book was written or started being written back in the early 2000, around that time. And at that point in time, I was really scared about coming out openly about being gray.
Why?
And so I wrote it as fiction for that reason.
Why were you scared?
Well, you know what people say about greys. We're demons and we're this and we're that. I know people down here who have come out and spoken as being greys, and they've actually been attacked.
Have you ever talked to Whitley Strieber?
No, I haven't.
Oh,
I haven't.
His
book was the very first one I read.
Communion.
Okay. That was what woke me up to what was going on, because I was reading all this stuff and I was thinking, oh my God, that's exactly what's happening with me.
How could you not reach out to Whitley and have a conversation?
Because I live in Australia and I've only been on Skype for a little while.
I think he has a Skype number.
You don't realize how very cut off we are over here.
Welcome to the universe of Skype.
Oh, thank you. Welcome to the world. But I do have many, many other author friends.
Okay. So we need to guide ourselves, and one of the ways we guide ourselves out of our problem is to realize that thoughts actually have meaning. Thoughts have control. Thoughts have substance. That's why the war is the war of thoughts and spirit, because that's where the real cutting edge of this transformation is taking place. So with that said, what are you recommending people do in terms of information that these guys have shown you?
Okay, well, as I said before, the key to it is understanding. Knowledge is power. Don't get sucked in by the amount, that's massive amount of fear-mongering that's being put out. It's really important to understand that, not to be sucked in by it, realize it's going on. By understanding, it helps people to wake up. I mean, that's the bottom line. People have to realize it's going on, not to buy into all the fear-mongering, not to actively look for it on the internet. I mean, people surf the net looking for negative stuff. I mean, you don't do that, you know, because the more you create with your own thoughts. So the more you think fear, the more you create it around you, because you create your own reality with the way you think. It's also another really important point that needs to be understood is there's a difference between religion and spirituality. Religion is a specific belief system with a set of rules and dogma to be adhered to. Spirituality, on the other hand, is a state of consciousness. Now, sometimes the two go hand in hand, but not always. A person can be highly spiritual without necessarily being religious. Spirituality is it's about practicing unconditional love to the best of your ability, treating others how you yourself would like to be treated, and this applies through the whole cosmos. It's not just for humans of Earth. The other thing is, science doesn't have all the answers either. The laws of physics, as they're understood on Earth, don't necessarily apply throughout the cosmos. So until Earth scientists and researchers can open their minds to accept that not everything can be measured by limited Earth plane technology, they will remain limited.
Hang on. Let me stop you there, because that's really interesting. Because, again, based on our work, our scientific research into the torsion field, I've said very many, many times, kind of paraphrasing Tip O'Neill. Remember, well, Tip O'Neill was an American politician. He was Speaker of the House, and he had a great line from his long, very successful career in politics, that all politics is local. Well, I've said on the show, based on the torsion field approach, that all physics is local, meaning when you go from star system to star system to star system, depending upon the mass, the spin, the age, the configuration of planets and other things orbiting it, the physics of that star system will be different than the physics of this system. And you just said, in essence, the same thing.
Yes, exactly.
That is fascinating. That's absolutely fascinating because it's, to me, I look for confirmations. You and I never talked before. I've never had a chance to read through your materials. I don't think you've read Monuments or any of my other books. So you're coming to my approach to this for the first time like I'm coming to you. The fact that you just said that physics is local, that the science that we think we know is not everything there is, and it changes, that is such a bombshell in mainstream science today, because we grow up thinking that constants are constants are constants, and in fact one of the hallmarks of the real physics is physical constants change from star system to star system, not by a lot, but by enough to make a difference, particularly when you're looking at millions or billions of years.
Exactly. And the other thing that just isn't understood down here is that the physical part of the universe, the part of the universe that astronomers can see through their telescopes and things, is such a very, very small part of the whole. The universe is actually multiverse across many, many frequency bands.
Mm-hmm.
So when we speak about the electromagnetic scale, it's not limited. It goes off in both directions.
And one of the key things we've been discussing the last few days is, do people, does consciousness, and I'm now going to talk about consciousness that's multi-species consciousness, because if basically, you know, when we hang out not here, we decide, oh, I'm going to be a draconian this time. Or I'm going to be a four-year-old Hottentot, or I'm going to be a, you know, Pleiadian, lives, you know, on near Alcyone.
Mm.
If those decisions are made consciously, then there must be a whole bunch of other stuff that is made consciously. Otherwise, why don't we remember?
Exactly. Well, this is taking us back to where Earth plane humanity is going. It's evolving slowly. To a more expanded state of consciousness. In other words,
and we're maybe
going,
it's too slowly.
Sorry, what was that?
Maybe it's too slowly.
Yeah, we're going home to our soul consciousness, because when we're between lives, we have that access. Whereas when we come down here, we lose it.
Hmm. And is that inherent, or is that for protection, or is that something that we impose upon ourselves because we couldn't stand the comparison?
No, it's for protection, because remember, we're only working with 10% consciousness here. So the human brain is limited. It can't. Going back to when you were asking me before about how could I talk about what had happened down here millions and millions of years ago.
Mm.
No, I can't, because I'm awake now operating through my Earth human brain. If you could come up on the ship and interview me when I'm in my grey form, I'm sure I would be able to give you the whole story, because I'd be far more open there than I am down here. I still wouldn't be quite as open as I am when I'm in my pure soul form, because all of us, of course, are in our absolute essence reality. We're all light bodies, L-I-G-H-T, light bodies.
Mm.
So even in my grey form, I haven't got full soul consciousness, but I've certainly got expanded from, you know, what I am down here.
Okay, well, hold it there. We're at the bottom of the hour. 1/2 hour to go with my guest this morning, Judy Carroll. If you want to call in and you want to ask her some questions, if you have some things that occurred to you that have not occurred to me, you might do that. Our number is 505-796-8802, and our Skype handle is Enterprise Mission. We're looking at the universe tonight, consciousness and other beings, as they have interacted with at least one being on this planet who is on the air tonight on the other side of midnight. My name is Richard C. Hoagland, and we shall return. And we are back on a frosty New Mexico night with a gibbous moon hanging next to the largest planet in the solar system. Quite a sight if you have a moon still up above your horizon. Go outside and take a look, or look through a window, or point a webcam out there, something. It's pretty interesting. Okay, we have someone who's called us, who's joined the conversation. Who are you, and where are you calling from? Hello?
I'm calling from Minnesota.
Good morning.
Good morning. I was wondering, a lot of contactees from graves, I'm assuming, are not necessarily gray. But when I hear about people being taken on ships for years and years and being scared out of their wits, to me, that's not loving at all. And it almost sounds to me like Stockholm Syndrome or something where, eventually they just feel all this love. Well, if they told me I had a job I was supposed to be doing, I would just tell them why, if you wanted me to do a job, then you shouldn't have scared me for 15 years or something. So just forget about it,
Judy?
Yeah, okay. I actually chose that myself so that I would be able to understand fear from the Earth-human perspective. I wanted to experience it. So that I could empathize with people. And it has helped me hugely, because if I'd never experienced that and people started saying, oh, I'm scared of the greys, I would have said, oh, come on, get over yourself. But I don't do that. Because I suffered from that fear myself, I understand exactly where people are coming from. All I can say is that I've experienced it from both sides of the fence. I've experienced the fear, but I have also experienced being a grey in conscious form, trying to connect with an Earth human who was caught up in a cocoon of fear. A very, very good analogy for it is if you're trying to listen to one radio station, but you have your radio set tuned to another station, the vibrational frequencies just don't meld. Now, the greys do operate on higher frequencies, and we often find it hard to lower the frequency rate to be able to get through to where an Earth human is operating. And this is why Earth humans are often taken out of their body with the paralysis thing and moved into the astral area, because it's like a between area, a halfway area where we can meet up with them. But the trouble is when a person's in their astral state, they're, experiencing a lot of baggage that they brought through from their subconscious. There's a lot of fear there as well. And so the subconscious mind can cause them to experience fear and can sometimes actually bring up like screen images that cause them to be scared.
Judy, you're basically saying that genetically we're a mess and that we can't interact with real higher conscious beings because our vibrational frequency, either because of where we live, the physics of the planet, of this solar system, or because of what's been done to us to reduce our frequency as biological vehicles of consciousness, that for one of those two reasons, when we interact with real beings of higher vibration and frequency, it's impossible not to freak out. It's just the innate physics of the interaction. And you're saying they spent all those years basically changing you so you can live in their field and not flip out.
Yeah, not me, not just me. I mean, there's
well, I'm using you as the example. Does that make things clearer?
Well, I understand what you're saying, but my radio frequency says if you want to do a bunch of experiments on my body, you ask me. I'm a free sovereign being.
Well, wait. I haven't heard her say that did any experiments so far. Did you? You're bringing that information from other
contacts.
We're not talking to them. We're talking to one person tonight, Judy Carroll. Why do we ask Judy her experience per se?
Okay, Judy experiment on others?
Okay, look, let me put something in here because I have worked on people up on the ship. What you need to understand is that a huge percentage, I wouldn't like to put a number on it, but a huge percentage of contact experiences are actually being faked. They're not genuine ETs doing it. A lot of this experimentation, there's a whole group of hybrids being created out of this, and they're not genuinely ET contact experiences.
So, hang on. So these are the dark guys in charge of this planet who are basically mounting a counterinsurgency to try to keep the ET influence at bay and under control. So they're creating these synthetic programs that mimic what the ETs are doing, but have a totally negative slant to them.
Exactly. They actually put implants into people's heads, and my job one night up on the ship as a Grey was to remove one of these implants.
So we're talking about a huge propaganda campaign with artillery.
Massive. For
the hearts and minds and souls of the human species. And again, why? What's the objective? What makes us so damn important to somebody?
To tell you the truth, I don't really know because I can't think the way they think.
Well, next time you are somewhere where you're talking to them, why don't you ask them that and then come back and tell us? Because to me, that's the obvious question.
I avoid them at all costs. I don't want anything to do with them.
No, you mean the dark guys?
Yeah.
No, I'm talking about the other guys. They have to know. It's got to be a very poorly kept secret. What's the objective? Why are the human? Why is the human race in the middle of this war?
They want to be in control. That's the bottom line.
Judy, yes, they need money. When you're at that level, you don't need anything. Everything is provided instantly if you just think about it.
No, because they're not at that level. They're very low level. The only way they can have any power is controlling others. They're not highly evolved souls.
Don't they have access to technology?
Yes, they have access to technology, but that doesn't make them highly evolved spiritually. This is the problem.
Please. Oh. I think kill your mic. Thank you. Oh, sorry about that. I think we lost our caller. I think the call went away. So, sorry about that. I hope that you answered her question. I mean, she seems to be, well, she's part of a contingent which believes an awful lot of stuff she sees on the internet, or that she reads in books, or that she sees in social media. The reason I wanted to have you on is I wanted you to cut through and separate the fact that there's real stuff and then there's a huge amount of fake stuff to try to submerge the real stuff in the noise.
Yes, exactly.
And
exactly.
We have another caller who's joined us. Good morning. Welcome to the other side of midnight. Where are you calling from?
Kenwick, Washington. Greg, I've been listening and I would like to ask Cynthia if she recognizes
It's Judy.
Judy, I'm sorry. You made a comment earlier about being one of the family. Does she pick up anything between the conversations that you're having with her right now and having a very good understanding of what she's saying? Richard, do you think that you are one of the family?
That's an interesting question.
Does she think that?
Let's ask Judy. What do you think?
Well, it's very hard for me to pick up on. I need to meet a person face to face. Once I can sort of connect with a person's energy, look, you would definitely have links up there because of the fact that you're so interested in this subject. So it wouldn't surprise me in the least.
Hmm.
Maybe not. Okay.
Caller. That question actually has occurred to me over the years, and I don't have any answers. Yeah. So when I get an answer, I'll provide it.
Yeah. I mean, you might not have links with the Greys, but you would definitely have to have ET links to even be doing this program and doing this work. The position you're in, you would have to.
Okay.
Do you feel any links towards any particular group?
Are you asking me?
No.
Yeah.
Oh, me? Yes, no, not at all. No. I'm trying to be neutral. I'm trying to figure out what's going on, and that's been part of the problem. But, you know, because I remember having interesting dreams when I was a kid, and I tried to put those in context, and I'm wondering if somebody did, in fact, visit. And that's where I developed this question, is the fear programmed in? Because it seems to me that kids would only have to have a teacher, a guide, an angel, whatever, if this is so endemic to the human condition, we've been so destroyed genetically, that if someone was going to come and try to salvage us, both physically and consciously, they would have to work around these blocks that are deliberately put in to keep us segregated, to keep us touch me nots or whatever that caste is in India that you cannot literally interact with. That seems to me to be, on a galactic level, from looking at this field now for the last 30-some years as I've gotten into ET archaeology, and I've looked at UFOs, and I've looked at UFO investigators and contactors, experiences, all of that. The bottom line to me is there seems to be some major effort to keep us separated, which up to and includes a huge amount of propaganda to keep us terrified and in fear porn of those who are trying to reach into the cradle and change what's going on.
Yes, you put it very, very well. You put it right into a nutshell there, Richard. You're right on, spot on.
Okay, caller?
Yes.
Anything else?
Just on closing, Richard, up here in Washington, I had contact with Red Elk at one of the conferences, and 14 years ago, I moved to Washington, and I've been going out into his areas, and there's investigating the pyramids of Washington, and I go out and I take pictures of the sun rising out of the mouth of a face. And the rocks.
On the horizon.
And there are other faces there. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to talk to you sometime.
Okay. We will do that. Thank you for calling.
Good night. Thank you so much for that.
Thank you. Bye. Night. By the way, M sends me a note. The name that I couldn't reach was Untouchables. Of course, I should have thought, what's his name? Robert Stack? I'm mixing our metaphors madly. Anyway, Judy, this innate fear, this has fascinated me. Because, I have these dim, glimmering memories of dreams when I was a kid and ghostly figures. And then, and there also was a lot of falling involved. Do you remember at the moment when you stopped falling in your dreams?
Well, I still do it occasionally. I think what causes that is the astral body starts to come up. Because, I mean, we've got to remember, we leave our physical body every night when we fall asleep. We step out of it, like a driver stepping out of a car. Now, as we're lifting ourselves up out of the body, if something disturbs us, it could be a passing being or something, and we drop back in, we get that sense of falling.
Okay. Because I know many years ago when I lived in Berkeley, it was happening a lot, and then it suddenly stopped, and it hasn't happened since.
I'd say you're probably trying to consciously do astral travel. I mean, not consciously in that you might have been trying to do it, but on a on a deeper level, you were trying to do it.
Interesting. Okay, so you wrote the first book as a kind of a nonfiction treatment of this is what's going on, this is what you can do, this is what you need to prepare for. Have we covered enough of the first book so we could move on to the fictional treatment?
Yes, but look, I'll just very quickly explain that the first book was...
And we have these, by the way, on othersideofmidnight.com. Go to Radio with Pictures. There are links to Judith's several books there.
Yes, it's basically an autobiography of my own contact experiences. Then in 2000, I was brought in to assist another family who were going through some very, very profound experiences. And I advised the mother of the family, Helene Kay, to keep a diary. Her children were being contacted just about every night. Hmm. And I advised her to keep a diary of what was going on. They were at first terrified, but once we spoke and I explained some things to her, she settled right down and accepted it and was no problem at all. And her daughter in particular became very close with one of the tall greys, and he started sending messages and teachings through to this daughter exactly as he had sent through to me, and we had never met each other. We didn't know each other. And she'd come out with, oh, Auris told me this or Auris told me that, and was something that I had also been told.
So that was the name of the being she was talking to,
Auris. That was the name of the being, yes, yes.
Now, is this the gal you wound up writing the book with?
Sorry, come again?
Is this the gal you wound up writing the book with?
I work with several of them, not just this one.
Okay.
I work with several, yeah. Yeah, so I told Helene, the mother of the family, to keep a diary. So she kept almost a nightly account of what was going on in their family home. And we wrote the Zeta message together because I included her story in it, and a lot of the book is actually taken directly from her diary notes. Now, the non-fiction book entitled Human by Day, Zeta by Night is really a docudrama based on the Zeta message.
That should be a TV movie. Come on.
Yeah. I would love to see something.
I could see Halle Berry playing it, okay?
Oh, look, I would love to see a film made out of that book. I reckon it would be a smash hit because what I've done, I've told the story. I was asked by the Greys, the Zetas, to tell their story, give their perspective on the E.T. Earth-human contact scenario. And so the book is written entirely from their perspective, from my own memories as well as from Helene's family's memories. Mm. And it's put across as fiction because we're trying to get across Zeta reality in Earth-human terms. And so I've used the fictional format to enable me to do this, because some of the things are so different, and by writing it in a fiction form, I've been able to express things a lot easier, and because back then I was scared coming out as a grey.
Ah.
So it's a fictional book.
Well, you know, I've often said that if people woken up in the middle of the night and someone's crying, fire, fire, they stop to put on their clothes because they would rather die than die of embarrassment.
Yes.
So this fear of what others think of us. I mean, when you do this show, you can't be afraid of anything because I get all kinds of weird, bizarre, stupid mail all the time. And you just got to do, you know, Art told me, do the show you want to do, so I'm doing the show I want to do.
Yep.
You have to be, if you're an ambassador from folks upstairs on this planet right now, given our history, it must be an extraordinarily difficult time, like walking on eggs, because when you get too close to the good stuff, if there's programming going on, there will be an automatic shut down the field, shut down the shields, don't let anything in, and you're talking to a brick pole.
Oh, look, absolutely. But that's if you're lucky. If you're not lucky, you get attacked.
Uh-oh. Okay. Moving on to the third book. It says history. I love the word history. I want history. I want an ET perspective on what we're figuring out that we can balance and compare scientifically.
Okay. Well, it is a non-fiction book, an account of ET history going back over millennia, speaking about the first ones who came here, how the human race was developed, and how one group, known in the Bible as the fallen angels, became a victim of ego and manipulation and took over the planet. They basically hijacked the planet, and this hijacking situation is still going on today.
I have referred to them, by the way, Judy, as the pirates.
That's a very good term.
They remind me of a bunch of pirates escaping from the Spanish Armada, you know, let's say they're English or whatever. They wind up on a Caribbean island, and the island has natives, it's got palm trees, and you know, they basically enslave the local population, play God, go out and do their raiding, use this as a base. I mean, it sounds to me, again, these are analogies, but it sounds to me like we have been taken over by pirates.
Spot on. Look, a lot of the stories in the Old Testament are actually these beings who are playing God. I'm not saying in every case, and don't get me wrong, I'm not putting the Bible down. The Bible is a book of truth, but it has been misinterpreted very, very badly, and yes, there was stuff going on back then.
Interesting. Okay, we got a few more minutes for calls if you want to get in and ask Judy something that I haven't thought of. by all means, please do. Otherwise, I will continue looking at interesting questions that I'd like answers to, like, are we coming up to a tipping point? This idea that there's a time urgency. Do your sources upstairs imbue you with this idea that there's an urgency, that we don't have all the time in the world if we're going to make this transition?
Yes, well, look, what we're hoping for is 100 monkey syndrome to take place down here, to get enough people who are really wanting to know and who want things to come better and who aren't just satisfied to sit back and be controlled. That's what we're waiting for.
Okay, but you can't just wait for it. You got to make it happen.
No, we can't make it happen. Humans down here have to make it happen.
But aren't you a human as well?
Yes, I am, but the ones who haven't got another planetary consciousness, humans. I mean, I want it to happen. Of course I do.
Okay, go to othersideofmidnight.com to Radio with Pictures. We got some pictures up there. I'm kind of curious what they mean. We have several links for you. We've got Judy Carroll on Contact with Grays. That's a PDF. That'll be a backgrounder. We have a press release for Zeta Series. That's a backgrounder. There's a review of the Zeta Series. What's the Zeta Series?
These three books is what
they okay. Then number four is 10 Levels of the Human Ladder.
Yes.
If you click on that, that takes you to, it looks like a diagram of evolution.
Yes, that's exactly right. In fact, if we have time, I wouldn't mind talking about that.
Oh, go ahead. We've got about 8 minutes, so go ahead.
Okay, look, the human ladder. This is a term that the Gray teachers use to explain the path or cycle of evolution, which is followed by all human-type species through the universe. But it also represents our multidimensional soul or higher self, which spans the whole ladder. And it's comprised of what the Greys call galactic levels, but these aren't galaxies or any sort of physical places. They're actually ascending and expanding levels of conscious awareness and awakening. Now, as I mentioned before, the average Earth human consciousness is operating on the first rung of the ladder, so therefore they consciously access approximately 10% of their potential conscious awareness.
Okay, let me ask a question.
Yeah.
Is that because of who we are as humans, or is it where we're stuck? Is the Earth...
It's where we're stuck.
The Earth and the solar system is not conducive to higher conscious beings?
No, because remember, the planet Earth, and particularly planet Earth, was pushed into that stagnant pool at the side of the water by the interference that went on with the hijack.
Okay, well, that's a metaphor. But you're basically saying the energy or the frequency or whatever of this system is different and is keeping us down.
Yes.
That's important to put on the record because, again, from our totally different research, that's the conclusion we have reached, that somebody likes the broken physics and they worked very hard for a very long time to keep it broken, to keep us in check.
Yes, yes, which I go into great detail in my new book.
Interesting. Okay, so level two.
Okay, level two, where we evolve from here, we'll be able to access 20% of our potential conscious awareness, and we'll be working with 20% activated DNA. And so it goes up through 10 levels until we reach the highest level, which is pure mind working with 100% of our conscious awareness. And that's sort of more or less God level, that's returning to the oneness of source.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what the human ladder is all about.
And
so as we evolve up through it, we're able to link consciously, more consciously back into oneness, which is self-realization that the Buddha speak about. And therefore, we're able to perceive and interact with higher and higher vibrational frequencies of energy. Bearing in mind, that's exactly what the universe is, nothing more and nothing less. The universe is energy vibrating at infinite frequencies.
But the key is that consciousness, apart from technology, remember that great line in Forbidden Planet where Dr. Morbius is talking to the crew of the space cruiser, and he says, these guys were able to do this, this, and this, and this, all without physical instrumentalities.
Yes.
So you're talking about consciousness that basically can affect the field level of reality, and because we're trapped here on Earth in a specific situation where we can't really access that field easily, we're trapped.
Exactly. Exactly. But it is starting to open up with quantum physics beginning to prove that we create our own reality. This is the first step that people need to take.
So would you estimate that there have been millions of people like you quietly helped by intervention beings, you know, childhood playmates, invisible friends, whatever the cover story was, that basically this is a societal-wide movement to somehow upgrade the human spirit, the human vehicle, so in fact we can achieve a higher consciousness?
Oh, yes. Look, that's what the Star Children are all about. The Star Children are starting to be able to link into the 20% of their potential conscious awareness. This is why so many of them are so psychic. They're clairvoyant. They're geniuses.
Star Children or Indigo Children. That's the name that I've heard.
Yeah, well, they're all basically the same thing. They're an upgraded version of Earth's human.
Yeah, I think the term Indigo came from they're such a high frequency, they're beyond violet, so they're Indigo, they're ultraviolet or something like that.
Yes, well, see, the violet is still connected to our physical, whereas the
well, that's a metaphor.
The colors go off into infinity.
Yeah, that's basically just a metaphor. Okay, so these, all right, so let me ask the big question. What's the connection of the Greys to the human family? And again, how did one part of the family, namely us, get in such an awful condition? Why was it allowed? And you said free will earlier, but if you're not free, if you don't know that you're in prison, if no one tells you, you're in prison because you did this, 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 and this, when you learn not to do this and this and this, you can graduate. We're in a prison that we don't even know we're in a prison of.
Well, that's the whole problem, and a lot of people are happy to be there. This is the whole point. Sure, people are starting to wake up now, and those who are fighting against it are coming out of it, but there are still plenty of people down here who are quite happy to just sit back, be controlled, have all the rubbish fed to them. I mean, well, you know, it's the TV is full of it at night.
Oh, it certainly is. Judy, we're at the end of the show. 2 hours have gone by just like that.
My goodness,
so we're going to have you back to talk about some more stuff at some point.
Look, I would love to.
I want to thank my guest this morning, Judy Carroll. Judy has been discussing with us aliens, ETs, Greys, and a magic word, the family. Well, that's the end of our show for this morning. Again, tomorrow morning, same time, same bat channel, we'll be here. Hope you will join us. And until then, keep remembering, third star on the left, straight on till morning. Good night, everyone.